So, we have a nice method with nice theoretical properties. We would like to have a similar method for any nonlinear function, or at least for also for any convex function which is not completely convex, we would be happy of that. One point is that this method heavily relies on how this function is done. Okay? Indeed, if you look at the description of the algorithm, what you have is based on A and B. Okay? More or less directly. Here you have A, here you have A, here you have B. Okay? All these vectors are built using the A and B. Okay, so. But indeed, it would be interesting because this method is very good. It is in the family of gradient descent methods. So it would be very interesting. So what can we do? Okay. The basic idea is already on the blackboard. Okay. Indeed, here we wrote it in terms of residual. Okay. In a numerical analysis class, you could even make all proof without even stating optimization. Okay? Somehow. If you describe the algorithm and you prove everything directly, you can do it. But the residual is minus the gradient at the current point. So, the first idea that should come to your mind is, okay, let's replace the residual with minus the gradient. Okay? And let's see if it works. Okay? Does it work? Yes, but there are some problems. Okay? So I will highlight the troubles we have to face and solve. Okay? Well, so let me write in yellow. No, yellow is too small. In orange, the changes. Okay. Let's erase everything which relates to the residual and replace it with the gradient. So the stopping criterion becomes the usual one. If the gradient at the current point is zero. Here, we can simply replace them, and this becomes the product of the scalar product between the gradients. And here we have the scalar product between the gradients with itself at the previous iteration. Okay? I'm just replacing. And here it is enough. I can take minus the gradient left at the current point plus beta k, the direction is over. What I've done up to now is just to replace the residual with the gradient, with minus the gradient. Oh, here I get into trouble. Okay? Because how do I replace this? Okay? Well, indeed, this is an exact search. I could do exact search and replace this computation of the step size. I could replace the formula, say, as we have already done, compute, okay, tk, which minimizes the search function. Okay? So, compute the step size of the exact line search. It would work, but there is one issue. We don't know how to do exact search. Okay? The same trouble we had with the classical gradient method. Okay? Unless you have a formula, computing the exact search is another optimization problem, so it's time consuming, it is not practical, we could do something better, we could do something easier, okay, which allows to achieve the goal all the same. So somehow we would move to some inexact line search. Or let's say we are forced to move to an exact line search because here we don't have any longer this nice function and we don't have a formula. Well, there's another issue, even more troublesome than this, and it is, okay, we proved in the previous case that the method is at the same method, that the direction is at the same direction. Is it still true? So if we choose the direction in this way, we take minus the steepest descent direction plus a turn which depends on the previous iterations, on the previous direction, which keeps track of the previous direction, am I still preserving the center or not? So the question is this color product negative or not? Okay. Well, this is minus the gradient times itself minus beta k the gradient times dk minus 1. No, sorry, here there's plus. Okay. Okay, this is minus the norm of the gradient square plus this quantity. This is negative. What about this? Oh, we would like it to be less or equal than zero. Okay? Is it true? If you perform exact line search, it is true. Because this is exactly the derivative of the search function. Okay? You compute it, you choose the step size in such a way that this is zero. We do an exact line search, we lose this guarantee. We lose this property. This is not necessarily negative. Okay? Are the world conditions enough to guarantee that this is negative? The answer is no. The world conditions do not allow to prove that this is negative. Okay? The world conditions are too weak. But the good news is it is enough to change one of them a little bit to guarantee that this is negative. Okay? I will not show you the proofs of this, okay? So, I will not perform proofs on this part. I will just give you the idea and the results. I mean, proofs are just a bit technical and don't provide much insight. Well, what you need to modify is the curvature condition. Okay. The curvature condition, if you remember, was telling you that, let's write it in both ways. This scalar product has to be greater than this other scalar product, times C2 times, where C2 was a number between 1 and C1, where C1 is the inside usual constant, okay? The parameter of the Hermitian condition. If we write it through the search function, I recall the search function, once again, it provides the value of f at xk plus t times dk once xk and k have been chosen. If you write the curvature condition, if you write in terms of the search function, what you get is that Ck, C prime k at t has to be greater or equal than C2 times Ck prime at 0. Okay? And if the direction is in the same direction, this quantity is negative. Okay? Well, okay. Suppose this is negative. Okay. Multiply the. Okay, no. I give you first the strong version and then I explain it. The strong version of the curvature condition tells you that the absolute value of the derivative of a set function at t has to be less or equal than t times the derivative of the stress function at zero. The
absolute value of the search function, of the derivative of the search function at zero. Okay? If the direction is at the same direction, okay, then this is a stronger requirement. So if p prime at zero is negative, this means that decay is at the same direction. Suppose this is true, okay? Suppose the new condition is true.
Well, we know that the derivative of the set function at t is always greater or equal than minus its absolute value. Okay? If this is positive, this is a negative number and so the inequality holds. If this is negative, this is its absolute values with minus in front of it, so they are equal. Okay? So this is always true. But if this condition is true, then this is also greater or equal than minus C2 times P prime at zero. Okay? But if zero, no, sorry. It's greater or equal than minus the absolute value, okay? Well, but if this is negative, this is exactly the derivative of zero. Okay? So, if this is negative, then this is exactly this quantity here. Okay? So, we prove that if the direction is in the same direction and we have this new curvature condition, also the old one is true. Okay? In this sense, this new condition is stronger. Okay? Because for the same direction, it implies the old one. Okay? It's a reinforcement of the condition. Okay? Armillo plus this strong curvature condition are generally called as strong wall conditions. We prove that there exists an interval, that given at the same direction there exists an interval in which the wall conditions are satisfied. Okay. Huh? And we also add an algorithmic way to compute a point in this interval through a backtracking or dissection technique. The same works here. I won't make you the proof, but the proof is almost the same as for the previous case. You just have to take into account the possibility that a derivative is negative or positive at the point you have chosen. In the proof, we chose a point Pu such that it is the maximum value for which the Armillo condition holds from zero up to that point. Okay. If the derivative of the search function here is less or equal than zero, the proof is the same. Okay. If it is positive, you have to do one more step, but essentially, the proof of the existence of an interval of values satisfying the strong wall condition is the same of the proof for the wall condition. Okay? So, up to this moment, small difference to take care of. Okay. If any is interested, the lecture notes gives you the hint, and you can try to do the computation. It's just a missing step, not more than that. But the point is, indeed, there is an interval of values for which the strong wall condition holds. Okay, so we reinforce the conditions, but we don't lose the good property that make them possible to be used. Okay, that make them consistent. Well, you can prove that the directions generated by the by these algorithms in which we choose the step size in such a way that the strong work conditions are satisfied, so we replace the exact search of the linear phase with an inexact search for the strong work conditions. Are indeed the same directions. Okay? So now we have the full picture. At the first iteration, we make a steepest descent iterator. Okay? Then at the next steps, we exploit this trick. We consider minus the gradient plus a term which depends on the previous iteration with this coefficient beta k which comes from the linear case. And then we perform a step in such a way that the step size satisfies the strong work conditions. Okay? This is the full algorithm. We can prove that this is a descent algorithm. Okay? What you can prove is the following. Takes the proposition. If our function f is bounded by below, which just means that the problem is not unbounded, that you may find the solution actually, then each direction vk generated by this algorithm, let's call it by the nonlinear conjugate gradient method, satisfies this inequality. Which provides a lower and an upper bound for the scalar product between the direction and the gradient. And the formula are this one. Minus the norm, the square of the norm of the gradient, divided by 1 minus C2, and 2 times C2 minus 1 divided by 1 minus C2, the normal. Okay. This is what you can prove. Okay. We want it to be at the same direction. Okay, so we need this to be smaller than zero. This is a square, so it's positive. We want this to be less than zero. Okay? When is this less than zero? So C2 is smaller than 1, so the denominator is positive. We want the numerator to be negative. So this is negative if C2 is smaller than 1. Okay? So, actually, in the strong work conditions, C2 is not chosen simply greater than C1, but also smaller than 1 half. Okay? So there are two changes. The first is that we reinforce the formal condition, The second one is that we ask the parameters to be less or equal than 1/2, in such a way that the method is a descent method. Okay, we are almost happy because the method is a descent method. We have a way to compute the strong work condition by the backtracking technique. What about convergence?
Well,
you can get the result
of convergence, which is not actually extremely satisfying, and I will show you why. And the result is the following. So the convergence theorem says,
okay, first of all, let's suppose that the algorithm generates an infinite sequence. Xk. Otherwise, the method stops and we are done. Okay. If you have two assumptions, first is f is bounded by velocity. The second one is a property on the gradient of f, and I will stay and explain it. The gradient of f is a so-called Lipschitz function . That means that whenever you take two points, the distance between the gradients is less or equal than some value, fixed value L, times the distance between the two points. So, there exists a positive value L such that this inequality is true for all pairs of X and Y. Okay? This means that Lipschitz means that the function is behaving more than smoothly, is changing with some stronger kind of continuity, okay? The distance of the points, between the points, controls the distance from the gradients, okay? It cannot be that the points are very, very close and the gradients are too far, okay? As x and y approaches, the distance between the gradients must approach to zero faster, somehow faster. Okay. This concept can be used also for a gradient is a function. If you consider it as a function, it takes a point in Rn and gives you another point in Rn. Okay. The same concept can be introduced for functions which take values in R. Here, rather than the norm, you add the absolute value. Okay. It's a stronger version of continuity. If we have this assumption, boundedness by below and Lipschitz property, then there exists a subsequence SKJ such that if you take the gradient, the norm of the gradient of F at this point, the limit is zero. So, the result is bad, then I will turn it into another formulation because of this. Okay? You're not saying that every subsequence converges, or that a subsequence converges, okay? But that the gradients of a particular subsequence go to zero. Okay, but the sequence itself might not converge. Okay, so the sequence could jump from point to point, could swing. Okay, could loop, could do something strange, but the gradients are going to zero. And then it is just one. Okay, so this is one of the weakest results we can get. Okay? If I add an additional assumption, the one we discussed the other day, that the sub-level sets are compact, this turns into, then there exists at least one cluster point of xk, which is a stationary point. Okay. How do you prove it? If the sublevel sets are compact, then the sequence, since the method is a descent method, is within this level set, so it has at least one cluster point. Okay, and you can apply this. I mean, you take this subsequence is in the sub-level set, so it has another subsequence which is converging, a subsequence of the subsequence, and its limit point clearly satisfies that the gradient is zero because here you take the limit. Okay, I will give it to you in a moment. The point is, what we can prove is that under suitable assumption, at least one cluster point, okay, is a stationary point. But there might be other cluster points which are not stationary points. Okay. And once again, I remind you, this is theory. Okay. This is what we can prove. Okay. That is different from what you achieve in practice. If you call the algorithm and you run it on a number of functions, okay? When you run the algorithm, generally, you obtain a sequence which converges, okay? And so all these differences in the theoretical results vanish, okay? Because if the sequence you have, you converge, all these results are the same, okay? The existence of one cluster point, all cluster points, the limit, they are all the same thing, okay? But this is in practice. In theory, mathematically, you prove different things, okay? Weaker or stronger. And this is one of the weakest we can prove, because it amounts to the existence of a cluster point. One, okay? So, I will give you the details. I don't know what to erase. Okay, I write it here. So if we add this assumption, the sublevel set of f at x0, so the set of points f at which the function f takes a value which is less or equal than f at x0, is compact. So let's say if, in addition, this set is compact, then at least one cluster point of Xk is a stationary point. Of X. How do I prove it? Okay? The method is a descent method. Okay? So the whole sequence Xk belongs here to a compact set. Okay? In particular, this subsequence given by the previous theorem belongs to this compact set. Okay? So this is a sequence in this set. A property of compact set is that every sequence which is contained in the set has a convergent subsequence. Okay? So from this sequence, xkj, you can extract a further subsequence xkjf, which is converging somewhere. Okay. Now, this property holds for the whole subsequence kj. So it holds also for this subsequence. Okay. When you take the limit for the subsequence, so we know the zero is the limit also for this subsequence. This is a bit technical. Okay? So as L goes to plus infinity. But since the gradient is continuous and the norm is a continuous function, this is the gradient of f at x. So its norm is zero, so the vector is zero. Okay? And what you prove is that one cluster point, at least one cluster point exists, and it is a stationary point. Okay? But once again, this is mathematics. Okay? This is what you can prove, which is different from what you get in practice. Okay? It's less than what you get in practice. But from a theoretical point of view, this result is not very satisfactory because it says, it states the existence of just one cluster point. The result we had on the gradient methods were every cluster point is a stationary point, so a better result. Okay, we can end up a little bit earlier than usual, but let me start addressing another issue, which is this time bad news for practice more than for theory. Okay. Why did we get this worse result? Okay. These methods fall somehow within the class of gradient methods. The direction is a descent direction. We apply the inexact line search, even in a stronger way, with more properties. Okay? So, we were already having a convergence result for those methods.
Okay.
And the result was taken every cluster point is stationary. Why is professor not telling us, okay, just apply that result and you get it here as well? Well, because there's one assumption which is missing. Okay? That result requires that the angle between the gradient and the direction had to stay away from 90 degrees. Okay? So at each iteration, this angle has to be greater than 90 degrees plus a fixed positive angle. Okay? So that the gradient and the direction in the limit were not going to become orthogonal. Okay? Because at most, the direction could go up to here. Okay? If you check the notes, you will find that theta k has to be greater or equal than 1/5 plus theta bar for some theta bar. Okay. For some theta bar was between 0. Okay. So that it was not convergence was achieved if it was not possible for the direction to become more and more orthogonal to the gradient and in the limit actually be orthogonal. Okay? And we said, oh, this is not a big issue because we take minus the gradient of the direction. We take minus the gradient as a direction, so this angle is always pi. Okay? Okay. Well, but here we are doing something different. We are not taking minus the gradient. We are not taking the steepest descent direction. We are modifying, taking into account the previous iteration. So, it might be that the gradient and the direction become more and more orthogonal. Okay. It is possible that this angle is almost 90 degrees. Okay. On Tuesday, I will do two things. First, I will show you why this is bad. Okay. And then I'll show it with examples on a computer. Okay. Running some simulation. But roughly, you can understand it by yourself. Minus the gradient is the direction of steepest descent, okay? The direction in which asymptotically you get the maximum decrease, okay? If you get orthogonal to this direction, it is likely that you are not making much progress, okay, in the value of the objective function, okay? So, I mean, if this goes down here, and here it is almost constant. Okay, the steepest descent is this one, but I move almost orthogonal here. I'm not going down much. Okay. And this, in this kind of methods, will create some trouble. So on Tuesday, in the first part, I will show you, let's say, almost mathematically, that it is possible that if a direction is almost orthogonal to the gradient, then the new point is very close to the previous one, and the direction you choose is almost the same as the previous one. Okay? So that you make a long sequence of very small steps along almost the same direction. And this slows down the algorithm. Because you make a long number of steps of iteration which do not contribute much to the decrease of the objective, of the value of the objective function. So this is the plan for Tuesday. Okay, I show you this,
And it will be mathematically up to some point, because I will say that if something happens, then something else is probable, is possible. If something is almost zero, then it's very possible that this other thing is almost zero. It's not exactly mathematics. Okay. So this is the plan. Okay, so we meet on Tuesday.